Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
Mussolini takes emergency powers. The Irish bring out the firing squads. And are the Japanese white? It's November 1922.
100 years from today.
Your world news update, a massive earthquake has struck the town of Valinor in Chile near the border with the Argentine. It happened just after midnight when most people were asleep. Over 1,000 are reported dead, 500 within the town and as many in the surrounding area. The earthquake set off a tsunami that in turn killed hundreds more at the coastal towns of Caldera and Coquimbo and was felt as far away as Australia and the Philippines. Even as death and devastation are visited on Chile by Mother Nature, we are reminded that life in Latin America can be held very cheap. In Ecuador, during the present general strike in the city of Guayaquil, 20,000 demonstrators took to the streets to protest the authorities. The Ecuadorian army fired directly into the crowd and killed more than 300 of them. Guayaquil, indeed. In Ecuador, you do not need an earthquake. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues 2 weeks after the Grand National Assembly abolished his throne. The last Sultan of the Ottoman Empire has fled Turkey. Unable to leave his palace, Mehmet VI sent a note to the commander of British troops in the region, General Sir Charles Harrington Harrington, reading, "Sir, considering my life in danger in Istanbul, I take refuge with the British government and request my transfer as soon as possible from Istanbul to another place. Mehmet Vahidadin, Caliph of the Muslims." To avoid any potential mishap, Sir Charles personally went to the palace and escorted the Sultan back to the General's own house for his last nights on Turkish soil. Mehmet VI was accompanied by his first chamberlain, his doctor, his valet, two confidential secretaries, his barber, his bandmaster, and just two eunuchs. His Majesty boarded the British warship HMS Malaya and left his capital, perhaps for good. The Sultan himself insists he is not abdicating, but merely temporarily leaving Turkey for his own safety. As that letter to Sir Charles Harrington Harrington makes plain, whatever the fate of his sultanate, Mehmet VI regards himself still as Caliph of the world's Muslims. So he was furious to discover that the Grand National Assembly had elected his cousin and Crown Prince Abdulmajid Effendi as the new Caliph of the Muslim people. The former prince will reign as Caliph as Abdulmajid II. The once Greek city of Makragefura on the west side of the Bosphorus has been handed over to Turkey by the Western Allies. Makragefura will revert to its Turkish name of Uzunkapri. Both the Greek and Turkish names mean the Long Bridge, a reference to the town's famous bridge, which at 4,567 feet is the longest stone bridge in the world. The bridge seems somewhat shorter now that both ends of it are Turkish. The new Prime Minister of Italy, Signor Mussolini, is not wasting any time. He went to the King and asked His Majesty for special powers that would enable the fascists to push through extensive fiscal and civil service reforms without having to get full parliamentary approval. King Victor Emmanuel was pleased to grant his Prime Minister these powers, but only until December the 31st next year, 1923. Mr. Mussolini, or Il Duce as his followers style him, has explained his reasoning in his first prime ministerial speech to Italy's Chamber of Deputies. "I do not want," he said, "as long as it is possible for me, to rule against the wishes of Parliament. But Parliament must not forget the peculiar position it is in. I can dissolve Parliament the day after tomorrow." The Prime Minister was widely seen as flaunting his powers in order to intimidate his opponents. But for his part, he congratulated himself on his restraint. "I could have had a tremendous complete victory, but I did not want it. I have imposed on myself certain limitations. I could have made this grey, toneless chamber a bivouac for my troops. I could have barred up Parliament and formed an exclusively fascist government. I could have done. But at least, for the moment, I did not wish to." He and his ministry won the subsequent vote of confidence, 306 to 116.
"Every morning, every evening, ain't we got fun? Not much money, oh, but money.
Not much money in Germany, and less and less fun, too. In Berlin, Chancellor Josef Witt and his cabinet have resigned following the Socialist Party's refusal to permit industrialists to join the government in order to help address the financial crisis. President Ebert has asked Wilhelm Kuno, director of the Hapag Shipping Company, to form a new government of experts. We shall see what the experts make of things. This post-war era appears to be an age of Republican government, but not all of them last. The short-lived Far Eastern Republic has been merged into the Russian Soviet Republic. Not everyone is persuaded that one will last. In Paris, the 60-member Supreme Council of Russian Monarchists has concluded its five-day closed-door session by contemplating what might happen were Russia to throw off the Bolsheviks and restore the Romanovs. The council has chosen Grand Duke Nicholas Nikolaevich as successor to Tsar Nicholas II. His Highness was Commander-in-Chief of the Imperial Russian Army during the late war and is a cousin of the Tsar's father, Alexander III. A general election in a modified United Kingdom, with the Irish Free State due to become a self-governing dominion early next month, this election was the first in 120 years not to contest Southern Irish constituencies, and in consequence, the newly elected House of Commons has 100 fewer members. Have we also witnessed a political realignment in the newly drawn state? Mr. Bonner Law's Conservatives remain in power, albeit with 35 fewer seats, but Mr. Asquith's Liberals and Mr. Lloyd George's National Liberals could do no better than third and fourth place. So the leader of His Majesty's loyal opposition is, for the first time, a socialist, Labour Party leader J.R. Clines. Among those who offered themselves to the people and did not find favour are Colonial Secretary Winston Churchill, who lost his Dundee seat to Labour pacifist E.D. Morrell, and the best-selling author H.G. Wells, who stood for the London University seat but lost to Sir Sidney Russell Wells, no relation. As a new Commons assembles, unemployed hunger marchers protest in Trafalgar Square. The cork is well and truly out on John Bull's other island as one group of Irish Catholic nationalists carries out executions of the other group of Irish Catholic nationalists. James Fisher, Peter Cassidy, Richard Tuohy, and John Gaffney of the Irish Republican Army were convicted by the Free State of, quote, unauthorized possession of revolvers. Not so long ago, that would have meant a fine or a short prison term. Instead, following a court-martial, the army of the incoming Free State shot all four men by firing squad at the Portobello Barracks. The Free State's Minister of Defence, Richard Mulcahy, announced that he had personally approved the executions, and after objections by opposition members in the Provisional Assembly, added that, quote, I prophesy there will be the greatest revulsion of feeling against the government and the army, but that there was no other choice. Quote, people have to be shot. It was necessary to shock the country into a realization of the grave thing it is to take human life. These men were found in the streets carrying loaded revolvers, ready to take the lives of other men. That's the simple case we have to put before the country. He added, and we may do it again tomorrow. It is time for us to strike. There seems to be no alternative. Do they want a sheikh in Araby as their king? Abdul Muhsin al-Sadoun is now the second prime minister of Iraq after the first, Abd al-Rahman al-Gilani, resigned in protest at the installation by the British of the Hashemite prince and short-reigning Syrian king Faisal as the king of Iraq. In the United States, they take their Republican virtue seriously. Just 4 years ago, the Senate campaign in Michigan was especially vicious, with Republican candidate Truman H. Newberry flaying the Democrat Henry Ford for his pacifism, his dislike of Jews, and his assistance to his son Edsel in order to get him out of the draft. Mr. Newberry won, but was subsequently tried and convicted under the Federal Corrupt Practices Act for election irregularities. He appealed the verdict to the U.S. Supreme Court, which struck down the conviction, and the Corrupt Practices Act, which the court pronounced unconstitutional. In light of that decision, Mr. Newberry's fellow senators said they would permit him to remain, but wished to put on the record their disapproval of how much money he had spent in his campaign. Senator Newberry did not care to be so rebuked and has now decided to resign. It is heartening to see a system that takes even the appearance of electoral impropriety so seriously.
Belgium put the kibosh on the Kaiser. Europe took a stick and made him torn. On his throne it touches it, and when John Bull starts a hit, he will never sit upon it anymore. Belgium put the kibosh on the Kaiser.
As the song says, Belgium put the kibosh on the Kaiser, so it seems only fitting that on this Armistice Day, Belgium has followed Great Britain, America, and other powers in laying to rest its unknown soldier in a mausoleum at the base of the Congress Column in Brussels.
Parlava, parlava, collo di se sangue prise parlava.
A great leader from over there is now over here. The former French Prime Minister, Georges Clemenceau, has come to the United States for a lecture tour on foreign policy and maintaining world peace. Upon his arrival in New York, he received a telegram from former President Wilson that read, "Allow me to bid you welcome to America, where you will find none but friends."
Here's a Japanese sandman sneaking on with a view. Just an old second-hand man, he'll buy your old days from you.
A Japanese Sandman may be pale, but is he a white man? In opposition to a California law barring Asian residents from naturalization, Takao Ozawa, a native of Japan, argued that the term white was ambiguous enough to apply to a light-skinned Oriental, such as himself. The U.S. Supreme Court was not impressed by that argument and has upheld the California statute by deciding that the term, quote, white persons, is limited to those whose ancestors are predominantly Caucasian and of European origin. Any Japanese offended by that decision can console themselves by taking to the skies. Regularly scheduled air service has been launched in Japan with a flight by NYNK. That's Nippon Koku Yuso Kenkyujo, or the Japan Air Transport Institute. They will fly passengers across Osaka Bay between the airfields of Sakai and Tokushima on Shikoku Island.
Wait till you get them up in the air, boys. Wait till you get them up in the air. You can make them hug and squeeze you too. Or if they don't, just say you won't come down until they do.
Would you rather get them up in the air without wings? Last year, we brought you details of a new flying machine by the French inventor Etienne Omission. His countrymen have long had a word for it, hélicoptère, a compound of the Greek words for spiral, hélico, and wing, pteron. The enterprising Monsieur Omission has now presented the first test flight of his Omission numéro 2, number 2, hélicoptère capable of carrying a person, and which modifies the original by using 8 small vertically mounted rotors that rotate in the opposite direction of its large lifting rotors to provide greater stability than his first model. What an age we live in. Do we now have a cure for cancer? At Columbia University, they have held a public demonstration of a giant apparatus built by the General Electric Company for the purpose of emitting X-rays. X-rays were identified in 1895 as an unintentional byproduct of experimental discharge tubes, and in fact may go back over a century earlier to William Morgan, whose paper to the Royal Society in 1785 describes X-ray-like glows. But could they be consciously used to irradiate cancer cells? The new General Electric machine at Columbia runs on 200,000 electrical volts of current and is so powerful that no one can be admitted to the room while it is emitting its X-rays. Doctors are confident that the rays will kill cancerous cells in human organs, but unfortunately they also kill healthy cells, so they would successfully kill the disease, but also the patient. Pending further refinements, the machine will not for the moment be used on human beings.
Love her by radio, you will find it radio. Want to reach your heart's desire, you won't have to send her word by wire. You snap by your love her by radio.
You can now love her by radio to the accompaniment of the Daily News. In London, the British Broadcasting Company has taken over radio station 2LO under Director of Programmes Arthur Burrows at Marconi House in the Strand, and has broadcast Great Britain's first ever news report. At 6 in the evening, listeners could hear details of the opening of the Old Bailey court sessions, a speech by the Conservative Party leader Bonner Law, the aftermath of a rowdy meeting involving Mr. Winston Churchill, a train robbery, the sale of a Shakespearean first folio, fog in London, and the latest billiard scores. Just 24 hours after 2LO introduced us to the British Broadcasting Company, two further BBC stations have gone on air, 5IT in Birmingham and 2ZY in Manchester.
Thank you.
He was a sensation as a sheik, but would you Raja he were a rather? I mean, rather he were a Raja? The new motion picture, The Young Raja, stars the glamorous Rudolph Valentino as an Indian Maharaja wooing an American lass. The notices have been stinkers. Photoplay dismisses it as Valentino's latest and worst vehicle. And the consensus is that the picture has nothing to recommend it except the costumes, which were designed by Mrs. Valentino, and with respect to her husband's exquisite torso, are somewhat minimal. You may prefer F.W. Murnau's German expressionist romantic fantasy, Phantom, which is open to tremendous reviews and huge crowds in Berlin. In sports news, the last two unbeaten teams in the 1922 season of the National Football League, that's the new name for the American Professional Football Association, the last two unbeaten teams squared off at Comiskey Park when the Chicago Cardinals hosted the Canton Bulldogs. The Bulldogs won 7-0. There will be a rematch at Canton in a few days' time. In college football, the two unbeaten and untied teams in the Ivy League faced off at Harvard Stadium in Boston. The Princeton Tigers defeated the Harvard Crimson 10-3, marking Princeton's first victory over Harvard in 16 years.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Oh, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back.
It's what he does when you take him out of the ball game that has his team worried. But Babe Ruth, star player of the New York Yankees, and Jacob Rupert, the team's owner, have signed an addendum to his existing contract under which Babe pledges to be more careful in his personal life in return for a waiver of fines of $9,100 assessed against him by the club. The addendum, however, only goes so far, as signed by Babe Ruth and initialed by Mr. Rupert, quote, I'll promise to go easier on drinking and to get to bed earlier, but not for you. $50,000 or $250,000 will I give up women. They're too much fun. The Mexican passenger ship Topolobampo has capsized just off the coast. Only 34 of the 125 people on board were rescued. One is missing, 90 are dead. You will recall the name of Lieutenant Commander Godfrey Chevalier of the U.S. Navy. Just 3 weeks ago, we reported his great feat when he became the first man to land an airplane on an American aircraft carrier. Who knows what other historic firsts lay ahead for young Chevalier? But 2 days after his flight from Naval Air Station Norfolk crashed near Lock Haven, Virginia, Godfrey Chevalier is dead at 33. Max Abram was a German physicist who in 1902 developed his hypothesis of the electron as a perfect sphere with an evenly divided charge, a theory that has been greatly eclipsed by the alternative view developed by Hendrik Lorentz and Albert Einstein. Herr Abraham stuck with his original and became a ferocious opponent of Mr. Einstein's theory of relativity. As Max Born and Max von Laue said of him, he loved his rigid electron just as a youth loves his first flame, whose memory no later experience can extinguish. Max Abram is dead of a brain tumor at 47.
Give my regards to Broadway. Remember me to Herald Square. Tell all the gang at 42nd Street that I will soon be there. Whisper of how I'm yearning to mingle with the old-time throng. Give my regards to old Broadway and say that I'll be there alone.
Give his regards to Broadway. He will ne'er see the Great White Way again. The play Lightning, famously billed as a live-wire American comedy, is set in an hotel that straddles the California-Nevada border and thereby derives most of its income from those seeking a quickie divorce. But once Broadway audiences fell in love with it, they stayed in love. The play opened in 2018 and ran a phenomenal 1,291 performances, doubling the run of the previous all-time long runner, A Trip to Chinatown, in the 1890s. On the last night of that record-breaking run, President Harding sent a letter that was read from the stage by the Secretary of Labor, hailing the virtues of, quote, an American play of the very highest type, by an American author, presented by American actors, unquote. The American author in question was Frank Bacon, who was also the American actor in question, in the title role of Lightning Bill Jones.
Now I've just been reading in a book here about a man, I think they called him Horace Greeley. He says, go with, young man, go with. Now, if you want to take his advice, I'll spare all the money I can. Here's $5 and a six-shooter.
At the end of the Broadway run, Frank Bacon immediately took the play on a hugely successful national tour. Earlier this month, during Lightning's visit to Chicago, he decided that he was suffering from exhaustion and retreated to the Windy City's Hotel Del Prado to recuperate. A week after that final performance at the Blackstone Theatre, Frank Bacon is dead of a heart attack. He was 58. Maria Fortunata Vitti entered the Benedictine monastery at Veroli in central Italy over 70 years ago and never advanced beyond housekeeper, patiently washing, sewing, darning for decade after decade. She came from a poor family, the daughter of a mother who died young and a father who was a drunk and a gambler. But there are those who say that she performed miracles and had the gift of prophecy. And there are at least two women formerly afflicted with meningitis who attribute their cure to the prayers of Sister Maria. She is dead at 95. Marcel Proust was an acclaimed novelist regarded by many as the greatest of our time, and that's just for his seven-volume work A la recherche du temps perdu, whose first volume has just been translated into English under a series title which the author's French admirers are not entirely comfortable with, Remembrance of Things Past, although Monsieur Proust certainly remembered a lot of things from the past in very great detail. When he started his monumental work in 1909, however, he was rejected by the respectable publishers and forced to pay not only for its printing and distribution, but even for critics to write about it in the French newspapers. It is now a widely acknowledged masterpiece, even if for some tastes too many of its characters are homosexual. Monsieur Proust is dead of a pulmonary abscess at 51. And that's the way of the world, November 1922.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
Do you enjoy the 100 Years Ago show? Well, we're doing it live on the 2023 Mark Stein Cruise and in a part of the world where 100 years ago there was more history happening than anybody needed. Italy, Croatia, Montenegro, Greece. Aside from the 100 Years Ago show, we'll be doing a Sunday poem, Song of the Week, Tales for Our Time, all your favourite Stein Online features, plus the Mark Stein Show with special guests from America, Canada, Britain, Australia, Europe. A week of Steiny on the Briny. Hope you'll want to join me. More details at steinonline.com and marksteincruise.com.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and O'Kill Media, all rights reserved.